Ken, did you have a favorite teacher as a kid?
You mean besides like Sesame Street and Saturday morning cartoons?
Yeah, beside that, ideally, yes. Somebody better than that.
Well, you know, I'd have to say my favorite teacher, perhaps of all time, would be Mr. Hovind. Oh. He was my sixth grade teacher at Woodrow Wilson Elementary School in East Peoria, Illinois.
I'm glad you pronounced that because I might have pronounced it more, I don't know.
Hovind?
Hovind or something. Hovind. Yeah. But what made Mr. Hovind so much better?
You know, for one thing, Mike, he taught us how to spin a basketball on our index finger.
That's extremely important. Very important.
When you're a sixth grade boy, it certainly is.
Absolutely.
And Mr. Hovind, he would judge wheelie contests during recess.
Now, that to me is really cool. And was it what were you doing wheelies on? Was it a three-wheeler?
No, it was an actual
bike?
It was like a regular bicycle, and we didn't have to sign a liability waiver first.
Oh. Wow. Well, that's a good thing. Yeah. And you didn't probably have to wear helmets either.
No, we didn't. And you know.
Did you ever win?
You know, I never did. Not once.
That's a bummer. That's sad.
In fact, I would win the falling off the bike contest.
So you did need the helmet.
I did. Yeah. And I probably needed the liability waiver.
Well, you better stick to spinning the basketball, Ken.
Yeah.
But when you think about it, all great teachers have certain things in common, don't they?
They certainly do. And Mike, what are some of those things?
Well, to begin with, they have to know their stuff, right? They have to know what they're talking about. And the best teachers are experts on their subject matter.
Well, that would definitely apply to Jesus.
Absolutely. And they teach in ways that are memorable. They think of it in this way. It's been over, you know, with Jesus, think of it, it's been over 2,000 years since the time of Jesus, and we're still talking about what he taught today.
You know, that's a really good point. It's only been 40 years since I've been in the sixth grade.
Yeah, wow.
And I still remember Mr. Hovind.
That's a big difference, 40 to 2,000.
It is.
Yeah. Wasn't Mr. Hovind, did he miss a finger? Was he missing a finger, Ken?
You know, he only pretended to have lost a finger, but I still remember that.
Yeah, I always feel like teachers, you know, especially woodshop teachers that are missing a finger, it's not a good thing.
Yeah, they're not pretending.
No. So one other thing that sets apart great teachers from other teachers is they have a high expectation on their students.
And you know, that would fit Jesus too.
Absolutely. Jesus was certainly more than a great teacher.
But he wasn't less than a great teacher either.
Definitely not. And he taught with authority, unlike any other teacher in all of history.
And that would include Mr. Hovind. Hello, and welcome to Jesus Changes People, a podcast that seeks to uncover the real Jesus and what it means to be a modern-day follower of him. Each week, we dive into different parts of Jesus' life and his teachings. Some of it may be familiar to you, and some of it, well, it might be weird. But our goal each week is to help you know Jesus better and to become more like him. Mike, has the mafia ever put out a contract on your life?
Ken, the mafia? The mafia ever put a contract on my life?
The mob?
Not that I'm aware of.
So,
no.
But you are saying then there is a possibility.
Possibly. I mean, I can't say that there's, but it's highly unlikely. But then again,
you never know.
You know, forget about it.
Yeah, well, you know, it's that Italian name just makes me wonder.
Yep, exactly.
But what if you did know that there was a contract on your life? Would you still go to karaoke?
Well, given that I don't go to karaoke now, that wouldn't mean much. But if I would go to public places, I might be a little bit more leery.
I stay away from karaoke for other reasons,
right?
Besides worried for my life,
right?
But here's where I'm headed. In John chapter 7, we discover that the Jewish leaders were looking for ways to kill Jesus,
and so he avoided karaoke.
Well, not quite. But he does delay going to Jerusalem for the Feast of Tabernacles.
Right, and when he gets there, he doesn't go into hiding, does he, Ken?
Not at all. In fact, he's teaching in the middle of the temple courts, right out in the open.
I might have gone into hiding.
Nope. Me too.
But not Jesus. Teaching was one of the main things Jesus did in the Gospels, and he wasn't afraid of the Jewish leaders either.
No, not at all. And after this announcement, we're going to look at the start of John chapter 7. We'll break down the story, discuss what it means to accept Jesus as our authority, and conclude with a conversation about judging people based on appearance.
Since their beginning in 1933, the Navigators have been developing disciples one person at a time through life-to-life relationships. Whether that's one-on-one or in small groups, the mission of the Navigators remains the same: to know Christ, make him known, and to help others do the same. What began in Southern California in 1933 is now a global movement. To help you become more like Jesus, you can find free discipleship tools and a great online library at navigators.org. If you're visiting Colorado, Navigators also owns and operates Glen Eyrie, a retreat center with a castle. Obviously, they host retreats, but they also are available for overnight stays, tours of the property, and you can have tea. For more information, visit glenerie.org. That's GLENEYRIE.org.
Mike, could you imagine growing up with Jesus as your older brother? I mean, you're like a normal little kid.
Right.
And Jesus, well, he's perfect.
Right. And I could hear Mary, who would be my mother and his mother if I was his brother. Mm-hmm. I know that's kind of...
That's right. Just if, to kind of paint, that's a big if.
I know, but yeah. That's painting the picture. I could hear her saying, Mike, really, why can't you be more like Jesus?
Mike, you know, Jesus always puts away the dishes.
Right.
Jesus never talks back.
Right. I imagine it might be a little tough growing up with Jesus. That's just my guess.
But... Talk about casting a big shadow.
Right. But we often forget Jesus did grow up in a family, kid. Mm-hmm. He had a mom, he had a dad, and he had brothers.
He had four of them. Mm. They were James, Joseph, Simon, and Judas. But not that Judas.
That's good. Because that wouldn't be bad if it was your brother that betrayed you. But anyway, I mean, I guess that's possible. But but Judas that you mentioned there is also known as Jude. Mm-hmm. It's interesting that two of his brothers, James and Jude, will write books that are included, Ken, in the New Testament.
And Mike, why is that interesting? I mean, they did have Jesus as an older brother.
It's interesting because at the beginning of John chapter 7, the section that we're in today, he's only that. He's their older brother. John makes the point of it by telling us, for even his older brothers did not believe in him.
Mm-hmm. And to help our listeners who may not be familiar with the story, this revelation about his brothers comes after they've tried talking him into going to Jerusalem.
Which is interesting because that's where the Jewish leaders were, the ones who were looking, who had put the hit job out on Jesus, who were the Italian mob of that day, I guess, were looking to kill him.
You know, now it really gets interesting.
In fact, there seems to be either a bit of sarcasm, Ken, or maybe even jealousy.
How so?
Well, they say to him, leave Galilee and go to Judea so that your disciples there may see the works you do. No one who wants to become a public figure acts in secret. Since you are doing these things, show yourself to the world.
A public figure is what they call Jesus. They think that Jesus is only interested in becoming a celebrity.
It's like they're saying, Jesus, you need to be on a bigger stage. It's time to take your show to the city.
And at first, he doesn't listen to them. Hmm. It's not his time, he tells them.
Right.
So
right.
He actually stays behind in Galilee.
Right, until the festival is half over. Then he goes up to Jerusalem, and as we mentioned before, he goes right to the temple courts, Ken.
And starts teaching. And as you would expect, his teaching draws mixed reviews.
Right, yes, it does, for sure. You have one group of people who are amazed at how smart Jesus was, even though he had no formal training, really.
Jesus didn't have a certificate in theology, much less an Ivy League education.
In their way of thinking, that was impossible. All good teachers were trained by rabbis, and most parroted the rabbis that taught them.
Mm-hmm. But Jesus had something even better, didn't he? His teaching came straight from God.
Right. No hand-me-down teaching from Jesus, for
sure. Nope. Straight from the Father. And that's what gave his teaching authority, something that the other teachers didn't have.
Right, which brings us to the second group of people, those who thought Jesus was, Ken, listen to this, demon-possessed.
Now, isn't that ironic?
Definitely.
You know, one group is amazed because Jesus doesn't have any credentials, and the other group goes straight to demon-possessed.
Right, and people respond in crazy ways to Jesus, don't they?
Yes, they certainly do. And you know, Mike, Jesus offers them a very simple test to see if his teaching is really from God.
He does. He says to them, anyone who chooses to do the will of God will find out whether my teaching comes from God or whether I speak of my own.
That's the key. Anyone who does the will of God will find out where his teaching comes from.
Right, and that raises an important point. Among the people who heard Jesus teach, their main problem wasn't an intellectual problem, Ken. It was a problem of the heart.
That's a great point. Jesus says that his people, the people who understand him best, are the ones who have a heart after God.
Right, and we learn by doing, but we have to choose to do the will of God, don't we?
We do, and I heard someone say one time, willing and wanting are the keys to learn to knowing.
Yep, that's good. That's right. We don't learn the will of God simply by discussing it. There comes the time when we have to put into practice what we've actually learned.
And when we return, we're going to talk about what that looks like.
Did you know the first church organ appeared in 900 AD? Before that, organs were primarily used at banquets, games, and circuses. The largest organ ever built can be found in the Boardwalk Hall Auditorium in Atlantic City, New Jersey. It has 33,114 pipes and weighs 150 tons. In addition to church services, you'll hear organ music at major league ballparks around the country, although most of them use recorded music, except for the Chicago Cubs, who have had a live organ since 1941. And my favorite organ was at the Organ Grinder Pizza Restaurant here in Colorado when I was growing up. Ken, had you been a teenager in the 60s, do you think you would have been, you know, dare I say it, a hippie?
Well, probably not. The reason, Mike, I actually like taking showers.
Oh, preach.
Yeah, you know, but why do you ask?
Well, I was thinking about a cartoon that was popular many years ago, and cartoon not being like, for the younger generation, a TV
like
cartoon.
Animated cartoon.
But like an actual, like, drawn one, yeah.
Yes.
So the first little square panel of the cartoon had a young hippie carrying a sign that read, "Don't trust anyone over 30." And then on the second panel, it showed a grown-up hippie carrying another sign, and it said, "Don't trust anyone under 30."
I actually remember that cartoon. You know, I probably felt the same way, to be honest.
Yep.
Depending on my age.
Yeah, I know what you mean. The first sign, "Don't trust anyone over 30, was mostly about authority. In other words, don't trust anyone in authority. Don't trust the man.
And like, stick it to the man.
Yep, exactly, exactly. But struggling with authority wasn't exclusive to the 60s, was it, Ken?
Not at all. It's actually not a hippie problem.
That's good.
A human problem. It's what the devil said to Adam and Eve, and I'll paraphrase. Who is God to tell you what to do?
Right. Something like, "He's not your boss."
You know, the serpent probably had a sign that read, "Don't trust anyone who claims to be the ultimate authority."
That would probably be, Ken, a very big sign if you were to write it so it could be legible. But here's the catch in all of this. God is the ultimate authority, and that's true whether you believe it or not.
Mm-hmm. And Mike, when Jesus finished teaching the Sermon on the Mount, do you remember how the crowd reacted? Matthew tells us that when Jesus had finished saying these things, the crowds were amazed at his teaching because he taught as one who had authority,
right,
not as their teachers of the law.
Right. I do remember that. Sorry, I jumped again. I got a little excited, but I do remember that for sure. And so let's talk for a few minutes about what it means for us to say that his teaching is authoritative.
Great idea. One of the ways I like to describe Christian conversion is by using the term surrender. When we give our lives to Jesus, we are surrendering to him.
Right. That's very good. That's very good. And it's a giving him control totally.
Yeah, that's part of it. But it goes even deeper than just control. Mm. It means I put everything under Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
I bring my mind, my body, even my opinions under Jesus.
Right. I see. We've talked about this before. It's a giving of oneself completely to him. So when one army surrenders to another, for example, in military conflict, they give up all rights to independent action, and they are under someone else's authority.
And the only way that you can get out from under that authority is to rebel.
Right, right. So if I believe that Jesus, what he taught, is authoritative, then I must surrender my opinions to what he taught.
Indeed. Whether that's my opinion about politics or money or how to handle conflict. You know, otherwise, Mike, what we're saying to Jesus is, you know, Jesus, that's a pretty good idea, but I know a better way.
Right, right. And this started with Adam and Eve and continues to this day. We struggle with submitting ourselves to the authority of God. And Ken, what is one thing you'd recommend for our listeners to be able to deal with this?
Well, I'd recommend starting with two assumptions if you're a believer in Jesus. First is that what Jesus taught was right and that it's best. In my own life, this begins in my head and not in my heart. My heart, my feelings, they may want to disagree with Jesus. I don't feel like doing something. But I have to intentionally remind myself that what Jesus taught, he is right, and it is best.
Right, right and best. You know, Ken, and this whole section here kind of reminds me of a previous episode we did where we talked about we've gone from preaching to meddling. Mm-hmm. but this is a good place to press pause, and in just a few minutes, we're going to wrap up our conversation by exploring our superficial tendencies.
One of my favorite tools for studying the Bible is BibleGateway.com. In fact, I have it as a shortcut in my browser. You can easily search different translations of the Bible for keywords or phrases, and even view two different translations side by side. The free account also gives you access to online commentaries and dictionaries. For less than $50 a year, you'll gain access to even more resources that will enhance your Bible study. I'm a paying subscriber myself. For more information, visit BibleGateway.com. Mike, at the close of the last segment, you referred to our, quote, superficial tendencies. I think that was a garage band you were part of.
Oh, man, I wish, Ken, that superficial tendencies would be, you know, one of those really awesome metal bands.
Death metal,
play 6/8 time, maybe some growling. And, you know, in every time people would be like, welcome, superficial tendencies. Ooh. You know, yeah, you know. So, but I mean, if I was in a band like that, the songs would probably be really long, Ken, not very deep, much like many sermons I've heard.
Ouch, Mike, you know. You just hurt Joel Osteen's feelings.
Ooh, ouch. Anyway, all joking aside, I was not in a band called Superficial Tendencies, although I wish that was possible. But mm-hmm. I do occasionally, like a battle of the bands, battle superficial tendencies.
Mm. Don't we all? You know, don't we all? The more I study the Bible and people, the more I become convinced that Adam and Eve's disobedience, it corrupted the operating system of the human race.
Right. It's like spiritual malware, Ken, that we've inherited from them. And some people may not know what spiritual malware is. It's like the viruses that we get on computers and things like that. But we as people, our operating system was to judge quickly, and we often rely on broad generalities.
Spiritual malware. Mm. You know, it's true. And it was true during the time of Jesus, wasn't it?
Right. Yes, it was. Back in John chapter 7, Jesus admonishes the crowd to look beneath the surface so you can judge correctly.
Or, as another translation puts it, stop judging by mere appearances, but instead judge correctly.
Right, Ken, superficial tendencies. Mm-hmm. There it is again, right?
You know, or as we probably have all heard at some point, don't judge a book by its cover.
Yep.
But Mike, what does that mean?
Well, that's a great question. I believe we make many snap judgments that aren't always based, Ken, on good reasoning. We might dismiss a person's ideas simply because they look or act a certain way.
Or because of their gender, or perhaps color their skin. Mm-hmm. What I'm curious about, though, is this. If we have these tendencies, and we know we have these tendencies, then why do we continue to follow them?
Well, Ken, I think we struggle like a lot of the people did in chapter 6, which we just finished. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're talking about chapter 7 now. But Jesus really harps on them in chapter 6 that they are so outwardly, physically focused. Mm-hmm. They're focused on the things of the world and what they see outward, and they keep missing the deeper, more spiritual realities that he's the Son of God, that, you know, so I think we as people, even today, still mm-hmm. fall into what's more real is externals and mm-hmm. physical, and what we determine by our five senses, our touch, taste, smell, hearing, all this, that's more real than really what the scripture says is what's spiritual is actually more real.
Yeah, and that's a good point.
So it's something we can't touch, taste, see, hear, smell, but the Bible would say that although we can't, mm-hmm. it is more real. And so I think we fall into that trap because what we see with our eyes is what really tends to be where we go, because it's just the commonality of the world today.
Sure. That's one of the things the Apostle John will write about in one of his later letters. Mm-hmm. When he talks about pride of life, lust of the flesh, you know, these kinds of things that are on the outside. And I've thought about this in my own life. You know, why do people keep going back to the same well?
Yeah,
you know, if the well is dry or if it's no good. You know, which we have these tendencies, we know we have them, and yet we keep going back to them. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of that struggle that even Paul talks about. Mm-hmm. Where he talks about, you know, the things I want to do, the good things, I don't do those things all the time.
Right.
And things I know I shouldn't do, I go back and I do them again.
Right.
You know, he has this struggle that goes on within him. And part of that, I think, also comes down to what we talked about a few minutes ago, surrender.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, maybe we haven't fully surrendered everything to Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so there's that parts that keep we want to keep control of.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Mike, what is one thing that we could do different? If we know they have these tendencies, we go back to them, how can we perhaps avoid that?
Well, I totally agree on the surrender thing. And when you know, I have something further than beyond mm-hmm. that, but I just wanted mm-hmm. to kind of echo what you said there. I think that's really good because surrender is not giving pieces and parts like Kentucky Fried Chicken, but it's giving our whole self.
Yeah.
And when God has us as a person, I think we've talked about this in previous episodes, he can work through us. The other thing I thought about, Ken, is one thing we could do different. And Paul, you know, Paul admonishes later on in the Bible, just like Jesus did, to not regard people by the flesh or by a worldly view anymore, mm-hmm. but to begin to look at people yeah. through a spiritual lens.
Mm-hmm.
Where are they at in their spiritual journey? Just like the different people in chapter 6, mm-hmm. you have the people who outright reject Jesus. You have the people who are following him, but then leave because it's too difficult. And then you have the people who can't turn away because of who they found him to be. And so we need to see people more on a spiritual basis. I think one of the hardest things for people to see is a Christian who maybe doesn't live the way a Christian should, but see, the Bible has a description of that person, and they are a person who would be called fleshly or worldly. They know Jesus, but they only know how to live out of what they, those five senses again. And really
carnal,
right, is another word that mm-hmm. is used. And so they tend to go after these things that are about getting their needs met. And really the transition that has to occur is to move them more to the reality of being more spiritually minded first mm-hmm. and then relate to our physical world through that, rather than being physically minded first and then trying to fit the spirituality into mm-hmm. it.
That's a great point. You know, I think being able to see the stamp of God, the image of God mm-hmm. on all people is so important.
Right.
You know, that it goes beyond what we see on the outside. That value comes just by the fact that we are,
right.
that we exist.
And Ken, where they're at in their journey too. Mm-hmm. You have to be cognizant of mm-hmm. a person in their journey. That makes a huge difference when you're interacting with somebody.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so Mike, this is a great place to end our conversation, at least for this point. If you, one of our listeners, if you have a superficial tendency that you'd like to share with us, you can send that to podcast@mtnvw.org or some way that you've learned to handle your superficial tendencies and to become more mature in Christ. You can send that to podcast@mtnvw.org.
Ken, it's time for our weekly Q&A segment. Yay! It's when we're most warmed up in the episode. So
it comes at the end of our recording.
Yeah, so we feel ready. We're ready to go. We're raring. And so, you know, here, are you ready? Are you ready, Ken, for the,
you know,
this week's question?
I believe I am. I've got BibleGateway.com open in my browser.
Right. You use the shortcut.
That's right.
Yep. So you're going to need it for this one probably. So here it is.
I'm
love
ready.
This question. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Ken, are there skunks in the Bible?
Yeah. Skunks in the Bible.
Oof.
You know, Mike, do you know what's a good rule of thumb when it comes to skunks?
What's that? Don't go looking for one, maybe?
Yeah, exactly. That's a good rule of thumb. You don't go looking for a
right.
skunk.
Have tomato juice on hand.
You know, the best I can tell, the actual word skunk only appears one time in one translation of the Bible, and that's in Eugene Peterson's The Message.
Mm. Now, does that refer to Judas, not Judas, Jesus' brother, but the other Judas as a skunk?
No, but maybe he should have.
Yeah.
You know, maybe he should have.
Where does it show up, Ken?
Well, it's actually found in Isaiah chapter 34, verse 11. And here's how Peterson's The Message translates the verse. Vultures and skunks.
There it is.
Will police the streets. Owls and crows will feel at home there. God will reverse creation. Chaos. He will cancel fertility. Emptiness.
Wow, Ken. That sounds like an encouraging and uplifting verse. Maybe it'd be a good life verse for somebody to choose.
You know, you're probably not going to hear that one on K-Love.
Nope.
That's my guess.
Nope. Not on a refrigerator magnet K-Love. Either.
But in the New International Version, it puts it this way. The desert owl and screech owl will possess it. The great owl and the raven will nest there. God will stretch out over Edom the measuring line of chaos and the plumb line of desolation.
Well, that's a bit different, but I still think it's the same idea. Do you think
kind
Noah?
Of screech owl skunk.
Yeah, possibly. Maybe. I mean, yeah. I was wondering while you were reading all this, do you think Noah took skunks into the ark with him, Ken?
Well, Mike, you know, that's a really good question. And I think here's what you ought to do. You ought to research that question and report back to our listeners.
Ken, that is a skunky answer. I've got better things to do.
No. You've been skunked.
There you go. So I see what you did there. You ducked the question. So we're going to add animals into this conversation. So if you'd like to have us research animals in the Bible or any other question, you can send that to podcast@mtnvw.org. That's podcast@mtnvw.org and make the subject skunk.
For those of us who live in developed countries, we take water for granted. We can get water anywhere, from the kitchen sink or in a plastic bottle. We can get plain water, sugar water, or even that water that has the little fizzy things in them. I think they call it carbonation. But here's the thing. There is a thirst that water cannot satisfy. It's a spiritual condition that Jesus alone can solve. He doesn't invite the curious to come to him. He invites the thirsty. In next week's episode of Jesus Changes People, we'll dip our toes into the promise of living water and what it means to come to Jesus and drink.
Thank you for listening to Jesus Changes People, a podcast that seeks to uncover the real Jesus and what it means to be a modern-day follower of him. Our goal is to help you know Jesus better and to become more like him. If you'd like to connect with us, you may do so by leaving comments or questions for us wherever you listen to this podcast. Help us spread the message by leaving us a review. And if you prefer electronic mail, you may send us feedback at podcast@mtnvw.org. That is podcast@mtnvw.org. Thanks again and have a great week.
So, Mike, when you were in your garage band called Superficial Tendencies, what were the names of some of your songs?
Some of our songs. Ooh, Superficial Tendencies.
What was on your first album?
Let's see. I'm an Inch Deep. That would be one.
Was that a play on Nine Inch Nails?
There you go. Maybe.
I have 1-inch thumbtacks.
Right. It's all about me and how I look.
Do you like my hair? Right. Is that one of your songs?
Right. Yeah, there you go. Let's see. What other good songs? So Superficial Tendencies. Let's see. I Don't Really Care Too Much About You.
Enough about you, but let's talk about how I feel.
Yeah. Enough about you. Let's talk about me, because I'm what matters.
That's where that came from.
I'm what matters.
He did a cover of your song.
Oh, who was that? Who did that?
That was a country guy.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. I mean,
I want to talk about you. Let's talk about me.
Right. Man, I could probably keep going.
I feel like your second album. Greatest Hits album.
Greatest Hits. Jeez. Greatest Hits would be.
I Tore a Nail.
Yeah, I don't know. Mm. That's good. It's good stuff, though. Ken, did you have a favorite teacher as a kid?
You mean besides like Sesame Street and Sunday morning cartoons?
Exactly. Yeah. Sunday morning cartoons? You watched cartoons on Sunday?
I didn't go to church. I watched cartoons.
Yeah, that's not good.
It was actually Saturday morning cartoons,
right,
I think.
You right. Hanna-Barbera.
Sunday was for pro wrestling.
Yeah. There you go. I don't even know where I was so lost. Yep. And... it wasn't that he was avoiding, and then he didn't. Oh, I got lost. Since their beginning in 1933, the Navigators have been developing disciples. since the beginning of time.
Well, you could have kept with it.
What began in Southern California in 1933 is now... Oh.
Mike, could you imagine growing up with Jesus as your older brother? I mean, you're like a normal little kid. And Jesus, he's, well, perfect.
Right. I'm sitting here thinking, I can hear Mary, his mom, saying, Mike, why can't you be more like Jesus?
Wouldn't she be your mom too, though, if you were Jesus' younger brother?
True. This is true. I probably botched it, but I can just hear her saying it. Okay. What did I say? Well, it's interesting because at the beginning of John chapter 7, where we are today, he's only that? I don't know.
How so?
Well, they say to him, leave Galilee and go to Judea so that your disciples may see the works you do. No one... Did you know that the first church organ appeared in 900 AD? Before that, organs were primarily used as banquets, games, and circus. At, not as. That makes a difference. It would, an organ used as a banquet would,
well, you could,
it wouldn't be, it wouldn't be a delicious meal.
You could spread.
It has 30, it has a
How
certain,
many?
A
How
lot.
Many?
Did you know that the church organ appeared in 900 AD? Not the church organ, the first church organ. It makes a difference.
In fact, I have it as a shortcut in my browser. Yeah, well, you know, thank you. That's a compliment.
Do you want to start over? I lost you. It's like we inherited Ken's spiritual malware. Some people may not know what that is. It's
malware.
Like viruses and things on our computer. Our operating system doesn't know what to do with them.
Yeah.
Wants to judge quickly, and we often, you know, when we are operating system, and if one of our listeners has a band called Superficial Tendencies, we'd love to hear the tracks. Send us a link.